Thank you for being here this evening. If you noticed, I wrote some comical stuff on the board there as far as starting in Genesis 31, verse 43, and I'd like to go read through 32 and 33 tonight, which I like the way the story flows if we could do that, so we'll look at it. If we don't make it, we don't make it. Last week, we had Laban coming down, meeting Jacob. He left, as we talked about. I made a mistake last week. He left 3 days ahead. Laban traveled for 10 days to catch up with him and wanted to know why he took his family, ran away. And as we kind of came to the conclusion, if it's what's being said or if you agree with it or not, what I kind of drew out of it was Jacob had tried several times on how to work with Laban. He got his wages changed. He was getting ripped off. And finally, he talked to his wife and says, the best thing to do is we just got to leave. Because if we go talk to him, he's going to lie, he's going to manipulate, and it'll end up coming to blows of some sort. So he's just going to escape. And sure enough, Laban come down, and he had a couple things he was saying. You know, you didn't give me a chance to say goodbye. And then he ends up saying, after all, you stole my family, you stole my daughters, you stole my flocks. It's like, well, did you come to say goodbye, or did you come to claim your stuff? And he, you know, if Jacob hadn't handled it in the way he did, it could have ended up some kind of a war. They talked about a sword. So now, we're going to read right here at the very beginning. This was part of the notes from last week, and I've got I got it set up. I thought it was fun. I was doing some work with the Hebrew there. But they're going to end up setting up some stones to make a covenant, a treaty between each other. So I'm going to read in Genesis chapter 43 on the top of the page 1 there, chapter 31, verse 43. Then Laban answered and said to Jacob, the daughters are my daughters, the children are my children, the flocks are my flocks, and all that you see is mine. But what can I do this day for these my daughters or for their children whom they have born? And so right there is, he feels those are his possessions. It'd be like me going to one of my boys' house and saying, you know, these are, you know, my children, and you've moved my grandchildren away from me. Well, which I don't, because, you know, if they come visit, that's nice, and if they go home, there's also a joy of seeing them drive away. Not to be negative by any means. But what ends up happening in the next verse, he says, come now, let us make a covenant. So Laban and Jacob are going to make a covenant because they don't trust each other. And it's going to be very interesting how this comes together. Come now, let us make a covenant, you and I, and let it be written between you and me. And let it be a witness between you and me. Now, in the box there, I've got throughout these notes on these first two pages, I've got the words in a box, like the word witness, and the meaning right there is the two Hebrew words put together, the ed and the aid, and together they make the meaning witness, evidence, or testimony. The next line says, so Jacob took a stone and set it up as a pillar. Now, he's done this before at Bethel where he stood up a stone. And if I make some progress tonight, we're going to refer back to that because he made a covenant with God also there. God says, I will do this for you. And Jacob, if you remember, he didn't sign the membership card or he didn't, get baptized. He said, if you will do that, then you'll be my God. So if you allow me to say it this way, he knows who God is, and he's watching God bless him, but it's possible that he hasn't, in a sense, made God his personal God. In fact, when he starts talking here later on, he's going to talk about the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of my father Abraham, the God of my father Isaac, but what he doesn't say is, my God, because that he's waiting to have some proof that this is his God. So that's very interesting here. So Jacob took a stone and set it up as a pillar. Now this pillar is going to be to make a covenant, a treaty between Laban and himself. And if you notice right there, the Hebrew, once again, is written, I've got in the square, Masaba, and that means pillar, stump, obelisk, memorial stone. And Jacob said to his kinsmen, gather stones, and they took stones and made a heap, and they ate there by the heap. So Jacob is going to stand up a stone, some kind of a, you know, an obelisk of some sort, and then everyone with him, his sons, which are there old enough to watch the flock. He's got some people traveling with him, some herdsmen. We're going to see them later on tonight. And everyone in his group is going to then start piling up stones as a testimony to what they see right there. And it says, Laban called it Jager Shahadoth, but Jacob called it Galeed. Now the word, again, it's you can see how it's written there. But the word Galeed means heap of testimony, from the word gal, which means heap, spring, or wave, ed, which means witness or evidence. And the Syriac word is an Aramaic word meaning heap of witness. So Laban calls it a heap of witness, and Jacob calls it Galeed, and it's going to be eventually called Gilead. It's going to be, you see, remember the land of Gilead up in that area. A heap as of stone. So it's a witness, it's a testimony, and they're going to have this as a witness, a testimony of what they're going to agree to do, but they're eventually going to call God in, and he is going to be the witness, because Laban's going to say goodbye, Jacob's going to go south, Laban's going to go north, and I'm not sure if you're treating me right. Now they're never going to have an interaction again, but Jacob has two of Laban's daughters. And as we'll point out here, and we read it last week, if Jacob, every time Jacob picks up a wife, that, you know, the estate, the inheritance, the wife's value decreases. If you've got one wife, and again, this is a hypothetical illustration, if you've got one wife, she's got 100% of your life insurance policy. If you've got two wives, it'd be 50%. Well, Jacob's got two wives and then two slave maidens that are working with the two wives. So they're each worth 50% of the inheritance. If he were to pick up another wife, like on his way, you know, into the land of Canaan or something, well, all of a sudden, Rachel and Leah, they're worth 33% of the estate. And so he's making Jacob promise, you're not going to mistreat my daughters. Verse 48, Laban said, this heap is a witness between you and me today. Therefore he named it Galeed. And I continue to put this word, the words just keep popping up here. And I was excited studying it, but I think as I look at it and look at you, it's going to be like, oh, yeah, let's not pursue that. Let's not chase that rabbit. But it was kind of fun putting it together, and I thought there's a lot more meaning to it. But anyway, Laban says, the purpose of the stones is to serve as a witness or explain the condition of the treaty. And Mizpah, for he said, oh, let me read this again. It says, and Laban says, this heap is a witness between you and me. Therefore, he named it Galeed and Mizpah. For he said, the Lord watch between you and me when we are out of one another's sight. Now, I remember as a kid, that was what we used to say at the Methodist church. May the Lord watch between me and thee while we're absent one from another. I think that's the King James. And we'd all smile and shake hands and say goodbye at church. But what this is meaning, this is two enemies looking at each other, says, I'm not going to be there to watch you, but I'm setting up this stone. This is a testimony to what we're going to agree on, but this is also a testimony that God is watching. He's watching you, and if you mistreat my daughters or you mistreat the inheritance, I won't be there to bring justice, but I'm calling God to be a witness, and you'll have to deal with God. And Jacob's like, well, right back at you, Laban. And so that's the greeting. So my whole childhood saying, may the Lord watch between me and thee while we're absent one from another, is listen, God's got my back. If you rip me off, he'll take care of me. And they said, likewise, if you mistreat me, you say something bad about me, you'll have to answer to God. Well, hey, have a nice day. Thanks for coming to church. And so it was, I mean, it had a good intention, but it's kind of funny. When I first read that, it's like, oh, this is right out of our church service. Like, wait, this isn't what it means. Okay, nonetheless, in the points there in the middle of page 2, Galeed connects the treaty event with the heap. You know, that's what the pile of stones is, a heap. Mizpah, Laban gave it an alternate name meaning watchtower, because it can be a watchtower. They would stack up stones, and I saw them in Israel out in fields. Stones would be stacked up, and there'd be watchtowers. And you get into this with Migdal Eder for the Christmas story. The shepherds were at Migdal Eder on a tower watching when they saw the stars. They're on a watchtower, built up stone, shepherds watching the sheep. And so this is a watchtower that could be heaped up stones that was used to watch sheep, you know, so you could have a little elevation. Or in this case, the one who's going to be on this watchtower is going to be God. Now, in no means anywhere in this context, again, people could set up stones and worship stones. They could think they'd build like a little place where God could dwell or a spirit could dwell. But Laban nor Jacob are thinking this stone is God. Nor Laban or Jacob are thinking God dwells in this stone. This stone represents to Laban or to Jacob that they're each watching. God is watching you doing. So when you see this stone, you remember God's watching. That's what it represents. And then point three, there is, there's a Mizpah still there today. Now, I mean, on your maps and then you go through Bible stories, there's a Mizpah on that side of, in fact, if you want to, this might help you. If you go to page 5, there's a map right there. Ramoth Gilead, or Gilead. See, there you can see that's the city there on the north, on the upper right-hand side. And then our story is going to pick up as Jacob moves further south to the Jabbok River, and then Laban goes away. But that's kind of in the area where they're at. Just before they go into the hill country, they meet, and that's where it's set up. And that is, there's a place called Mizpah there, but there's also a place called Mizpah over just north of Jerusalem, a few miles, which means the same, or, you know, is similar. Chapter, page 3, verse 53, the God of Abraham, the God of Nahor, the God of their father, judge between us, is what Laban is saying. So it's interesting right here that when Laban speaks, he says, this heap is a witness and a pillar is a witness that I will not pass over this heap to you, and you will not pass over this heap and this pillar to me to do harm. So now, besides being a witness, it now becomes a boundary marker. You will go north, I'll go south. And then he says, again, interesting, verse 53, the God of Abraham and the God of Nahor. Now, Abraham is Jacob's grandfather, and Nahor is Laban's grandfather or father. And now the question comes, are they the same God? Or did Abraham break away from the family and follow Yahweh, and Nahor stayed with the gods of Terah? Because we know in Joshua, the verses are coming up here, I've got it written down, that Terah was polytheism. He had several gods. Acts refers to that also. They're following idols. So Terah was an idol worshiper. So the family could have just followed into that culture. And Abraham may have broke away. He did break away and follow Yahweh. But Nahor and Laban may still be following a different deity. So it's interesting. They don't talk about my God and your God, or as us as a group, we would say our God, Jesus, the Lord, God. So they mentioned two different gods. They said, we don't know. It just says that. So the God of Abraham and the God of Nahor, the God of their father, which would be Terah, and he was a polytheist, judge between us. So Jacob swore by the fear of his father Isaac, meaning he swore by Isaac's God, which is very interesting. I don't pray to my father's God. I pray to my God. I don't pray. You understand what I'm saying? So there's that absence, which is coming up, going to make part of the story more interesting later. And Jacob offered a sacrifice in the hill country and called his kinsmen to eat bread. They ate bread and spent the night in the hill country. And then on that map right there where it says Ramoth Gilead, that's again Gilead. That's right there talking what this is called, Gilead. Right south of that, it starts rolling into the hill country. Laban would have turned and went back up to Padan Aram, and Jacob would have moved through the hill country on down to Jabbok. But before they do, that night, they have a covenant meal. It says they had a meal. That is a covenant meal, a covenant ceremony. and they agreed. The rocks were stood up, and they swore allegiance to the covenant. Now, on page 4, I want to go page 2. And page 4. Okay, did I do all that? I turned over the map and I got confused. Page 1, page 2. Stones as witness, Mizpah, the Lord watching me and you. Oh, yeah. Here's the agreement. On bottom of page 2, verse 50. He says, Laban says, he said, the Lord watch between me and you when we are out of one another's sight. If you oppress my daughters, or if you take wives beside my daughters, although no one is with us, see God is witness between you and me. Then Laban said to Jacob, see this heap and pillar which I have set up between you and me. This heap is a witness, and the pillar is a witness, that I will not pass over this heap to you, and you will not pass over this heap and this pillar to me to do harm. Then the God of Abraham, I skipped something there for some reason. Okay, and then the bottom of page 3, they ate bread and spent the night in the hill country. Well, that's good, because we're moving right along now. All right. I think everything I said was on. Okay, point 3 on page 4, who was the God of terror? That's Joshua 24:2. And 15 indicate terror, practice polytheism. Verse 55, early in the morning, Laban arose, kissed his grandchildren and his daughters, and blessed them, and Laban departed and returned home. So that's the end of Laban. He kisses, and that's important, he kisses his daughters, kisses the grandchildren, and blesses them, but doesn't bless Jacob. He just made a covenant. He's not going to bless him. You go your way. And they took off. So now we're on that map. And we can see right there, they're going to move down. And what is going to take place now is very interesting. We're switching subjects, but we're not switching the journey. We're just going from chapter 31 into 32, and I want to get into 33. But here is the Jordan River, Dead Sea. Here's the Jabbok. Jacob is taking his caravan, and he's got servants, he's got sons, he's got servants, he's got flocks, they've got camels, they've got a lot of possessions, and he's moving down to the Jabbok. Now I'm going to shorten the Dead Sea up here so I don't have to draw it again. Down here is the land of Edom. If you remember, Esau has gone down here and settled. This is the promised land. This is the land given to Abraham. Esau has willingly moved away and has a family down here. And he's got a lot of possessions himself. Jacob realized he's moving back into Esau territory. And hasn't seen him for 20 years. And he's somewhat concerned. And so he's going to prepare some manipulative devices. He's going to send him gifts. He's going to divide his family into two groups in case Esau attacks. He knows Esau's a hunter, that Esau's a military man. So he's not sure. I mean, really, I think, and this gets a little confusing because it doesn't tell us exactly what Jacob is thinking. You kind of got to read between the lines, so you're free to disagree with me. But it seems like there's some fear of meeting Esau again because he fled from him. But there's also this idea that there's going to be an encounter with God, and Jacob is running this whole thing, this whole 20 years, has been because he's prospered, and God has met him at Bethel, but he deceived his brother a couple of times. He had to deal with Laban, and he had to manipulate that situation for 20 years. They're changing his wages. So everything Jacob has done so far is it's been a trick or deception. It's been hard work. It's been trying to avoid Laban. Laban's been a problem. He's trusted God, but now he's coming down here, and the first thing that happens is he's going to meet a camp of angels. I'll read it to you. I'm going to read it right out of the text here in just a moment. He's going to meet a camp of angels, and by the time the chapter's done, he's going to be fighting with an angel or a man. Now, here's what's going to happen. He's going to meet these angels, And at the end of the story, he's going to meet God. God is going to come and appear to him. It's pretty clear. Let me read this, and you got a map to follow. Chapter 32. Jacob also went on his way. Laban went north. Jacob also went on his way. And the angels of God met him. Now, what does that mean? What is Jacob's intention with Esau? And when he meets the angels of God, how does he meet them? Does they come up and say hi? Do they have a vision or a message for him? When Jacob saw them, he said, "This is the camp of God." Now, remember the last time he saw angels was at Beth, as far as we know, was 20 years ago at Bethel, where he saw them going up and down on the ladder, which I think is stairway. And then the Lord came down and talked to him, and they had that conversation. We'll refer to it several times. Now they're in a camp. One thing to, as you pass by, the stairway, especially if we were thinking ziggurat or some kind of access to heaven, that is a permanent structure. It's like God's stairway down into the promised land. It would be in a building. A camp right here is temporary. It's traveling. So we could say, because of what we coming out of a few chapters earlier, coming out of Bethel, and the angels were ascending and descending on the stairway, that those angels may have picked up camp and moved across. You know, they were over here in Bethel. Now they've moved over here, which is a temporary dwelling. I'm making stuff up here. I'm putting things together. But these are the same angels and the same God. But they're in a camp. And Jacob sees them. This is the camp of God. So he named the place Mahanaim. Now, I've got it in the notes there, and you can see it. But the word Mahanaim simply means two camps. So there's two camps here. It doesn't tell you what... So he named it Mahanaim. Okay, two camps. Well, is it your camp and their camp? Is it their camp and Laban's camp? Is there two camps of angels? In just a moment, Jacob's going to have a strategy so that he can avoid a conflict with Esau. I mean, he does. That's why I say he's afraid, because he's going to take his family and he's going to say, "Rachel and Bilhah, you go over here." Now, we're not sure exactly which one went with who. "Rachel and Bilhah, you go over there with your kids, and I'll send these 12 servants with the flocks here and some camels. Leah and Zilpha, you go this way." And that way, if Esau sees, there's Jacob's people, and he comes and attacks you and slaughters you, the rest of you can run away. So what I'm going to do, kids, I'm going to put three of you, I got six boys, three of you are here, three of you are here. So if three of you get killed, the other three will live. All right? What a great plan. And that's going to be his plan. So he's going to eventually take his camp and turn it into two camps. All right, so that we'll continue with that here in a minute. Jacob sent messengers ahead of him. Okay, I'll stop here. I want to know more. That's just two verses. Jacob went ahead on his way, and angels of God met him. When Jacob saw them, he says, "This is the camp of God." So he named that place Mahanaim. So it's like he's coming back into the promised land, so they're there to meet him and welcome him back in the promised land. Why aren't they at Bethel? Did they go over here to meet him? Are they bringing... What happens? He met them. That's the end. There it is. We're done with that story. So now we go on to Esau. Jacob sent messengers ahead of him to his brother Esau in the land of Seir. Now that's one of the cities in Edom, Seir. So he's going to send messengers ahead. Let me get some lines erased over here. So he's going to send messengers ahead down here. He instructed them, saying, this would be his shepherds that he's hired, because he's keeping his kids back with his wives. "This is what you are to say to my master Esau." Now, he's referring to master as a polite. He's going out of his way to be very cordial. He's going to do everything he can to present a very civilized, cooperative approach to Esau. "Your master, this is what you say to my master Esau. Your servant Jacob," he calls himself servant. Now, Jacob's got no intention of coming back and serving in Jacob's family or serving under Jacob's leadership or Esau's leadership, but Jacob does not want a conflict. I know this is your territory, this is your home, I'm coming back, I'm here to cooperate. Your servant Jacob says, I have been staying with Laban and have remained there till now. I have cattle and donkeys and sheep and goats and men servants and maid servants. And I think you can read that literally. I mean, he's got men servants and maid servants. He's got a huge camp. Now I am sending this message to my Lord that I may find favor in your eyes. I mean, these I'm very blessed. I have everything I need. When the messengers returned to Jacob, they says, we went to your brother Esau, and now that he knows you're in town, so that's how he found out, they're going down to tell him Jacob's coming, and now he is coming to meet you, and 400 men are with him. So it would appear that he has sent these guys out ahead of time, and now they've come back, and they say, yeah, Esau armored up. His men, remember, 400 men. Remember, Abraham had 318 armed men that went out and defeated the kings from the east. 318. Esau's coming with 400. I mean, that's a small army. That's an army big enough to drive out some kings, as Abraham did. And now, what's your first thought concerning this fear? Is Esau's coming for retaliation. Well, that's what happens. Verse 7, in great fear and distress, Jacob divided his people who were with him into two camps, and the flocks and herds and camels as well. He thought, if Esau comes and attacks one group, the group that is left may escape. Then Jacob prayed. Now, this is interesting. Jacob's praying right here. O God of my father Abraham. Again, not personal yet. God of my father Isaac. This is the second time. And then, O Lord, who said to me, now he's going to go back to Bethel. Oh, excuse me. He's going to go back to Paddan Aram where I'll read it. Go back to your country and your relatives, and I will make you prosper. In other words, the reason he's going back, he was ready to go back, but God told him, yes, go back. So he says, I am here on this side of the Jabbok, ready to face 400 men of Esau. I'm in this position because you told me it's time to go back. I'm obeying. Now I'm in trouble. But he's praying. I am unworthy of all the kindness and faithfulness you have shown your servant. And that word means small. I'm insignificant. There's no reason I should have all this. I had only my staff when I crossed the Jordan, but now I have become two groups. So he hit from this time he flees, he crosses with a staff. And now that's interesting. Moses had a staff, delivered the people. Jacob left the land with a staff, and he comes back with an entire nation, similar to Moses. There's no necessary connection. Now he says, save me, I pray, from the hand of my brother Esau. He clearly thinks he's in trouble. For I am afraid he will come and attack me, and also the mothers with their children. But you have said, I will surely make you prosper and will make your descendants like the sand of the sea, which cannot be counted. So I'm standing here with the seed of your promise being fulfilled, ready to face Esau, and I need you to go into action. We would call that a prayer of faith. He spent the night there, and from what he had with him, he selected a gift for his brother Esau. Now he's going to send out those waves. Those first one was just going down to tell Esau, you know, since they didn't have Facebook, Jacob's coming. Now he's going to send out again. Now watch these gifts. A gift for his brother Esau. 200 female goats and 20 male goats, 200 ewes and 20 rams, 30 female camels with their young, 40 cows and 10 bulls. I mean, you know what you can do with 40 cows and 10 bulls. I mean, that's a fairly good startup company right there, or business. And 20 female donkeys and 10 male donkeys. So there's enough to start a small nation with that. He put them in the care of his... Now, that's what he's giving as a gift. So he's still got much more that he's keeping back with him. He put them in the care of his servants, his men servants and maid servants, each herd by itself. So he's got several herds. We do not know the number of herds or the waves of herds, but this group of shepherds is taking down some donkeys and camels and bulls and cows, and then follow that is there's going to be a space between them. We're not sure how large of a space it is, but it's got to be fair. These are going to arrive, and Esau and his 400 men are going to meet them, and they're going to question them. All right. And then they're going to go on, and here comes another one, and they're going to question them. And Esau's questions are going to be similar, and Jacob's telling how to answer those questions. And these are all going to be gifts for Esau. 40 cows. Okay. He put them in the care of his servants. I'm in verse... Is it 16? Each herd by itself and said to his servants, go ahead of me and keep some space between the herds. So he doesn't see all of them at once. A group will come. You can answer some questions. And about the time he's processing, here comes another wave. He instructed the one in the lead, when my brother Esau meets you and asks, and there's two questions he assumes he's going to ask, to whom do these belong? Whose flocks are these? Clearly, they're not yours. You're the shepherd. Who do you work for? You know, it's like a trucker pulling up with a load of cargo. It's like, is this your cargo? No. Who are you driving for? And that's what. Yeah. So who do these belong to? They'll say, your brother Jacob. And he'll ask, where are you going? And who owns all these animals in front of you? Then you are to say, they belong to your servant Jacob. Humbly say, not your master, not the possessor of the promise of Abraham, just your servant Jacob. It's been 20 years. They are a gift sent to my lord Esau. They're yours. They're from Jacob, but as of this point, I'm giving them to you. And he's like processing, and we're not sure how much more he traveled, but he's going to start collecting him or putting him somewhere, like wait here or go over there. And then here comes another group. They are gifts sent to my lord Esau, and he is coming behind us. So behind us is Jacob. Here comes another flock. What is this? Well, Jacob's behind us. Here comes another flock. Jacob's behind us. So this goes on. We don't have a number. Is it 3? Is it 10? Is it 20? He also instructed the second, the third, and all the others who followed the herds, you are to say the same thing to Esau when you meet him. And be sure to say, your servant Jacob is coming behind us. For he thought, I will pacify him with these gifts I am sending on ahead. Later, when I see him, perhaps he will receive me. So Jacob's gifts went on ahead of him, but he himself spent the night in the camp. There's a camp right here on the side of the Jabbok. Now, again, I think I've got it written down that the Jabbok is like 18 miles north of the Dead Sea, and it flows and empties into the Jordan River there. All right. Are you ready for, again, here? This is very important right here, and I hope I can handle this. That night, Jacob got up and took his two wives, his two maidservants, that'd be Bilhah and Zilpha, and his 11 sons, Benjamin's not born yet, and crossed the ford of the Jabbok. So the herds are gone. Now they cross right here. They cross on this side of the Jabbok right here, and he's going to put them in two camps. Across the ford of the Jabbok. After he had sent them across the stream, he sent over all his possessions. So Jacob was left alone, and a man wrestled with him. So all his two camps are, we've got herds going here. We've got two camps on this side. One's going this way. One's going that way. I'm not sure. But Jacob is staying on this side of the Jabbok. And now one of the strangest, sets of verses here. That night, Jacob got up and took his... Okay, wait. Verse 24, so Jacob was left alone, and a man, it just says, a man wrestled with him till daybreak. When the man saw that he could not overpower him, he touched the socket of Jacob's hip so that his hip was wrenched as he wrestled with the man. Then the man said, let me go, for it is daybreak. Sun will come up and then you'll see his face. But Jacob replied, I will not let you go unless you bless me. I don't want to say this is difficult to work with, but Jacob has the promise of Abraham from Isaac because he tricked, because he's been working hard, he's got Laban's material. But what he does not have, he's got all that, 20 years, but he has never received the blessing from God. He has not been given the Abrahamic covenant by God. God gave it to Abraham. God gave it to Isaac. Jacob has taken it. It appears Jacob, he knows he wants to be blessed. Now, Laban didn't bless him, but he wants to be blessed. I think it's not a radical statement, that this is God. This is a theophany. This is, if we'd say, the second member of the Trinity down there wrestling with Jacob. And there's some changes that are going to take place. And it's pretty clear as you go through this. I will not let you go unless you bless me. I want a blessing, and I'm going to hang on to you and hold you here until you bless me. Instead of me tricking and Laban giving me these things, me laboring, I want to receive it from God. It could be, I don't want to go too far into theology with this, but it could be similar to working for a relationship with God, of going to church, of being a good person, of trying to attain all these things. And when the gift of salvation is just, Jesus just did it for you. He offers it to you. I offer this to you. And Jacob has everything, but he has never just let God bless him. Now, he's blessed by God. God told him, I'll bless you. But he's basically going to be asking God, I'm not going to let you go until you bless me. And it's interesting that because he wouldn't let him go, the man touched his hip so that his hip is wrenched. It's twisted. And I think it's not like an injury. He's got to, go to the whirlpool, get some therapy, work it off, walk every day and you'll be fine. I think Jacob, when he goes to Egypt with his sons, I think he limps into Egypt. I think Jacob, now this, you can talk about this, think about it. I don't think Jacob ever recovered from this limp. Jacob was strong. Even in the mother's womb, he had a hold of his brother's heel. He was strong. Remember when those waiting for all the men would come and move the stone off the well, and Rachel was there ready to water the sheep? He just moved it himself. He spent 20 years in harsh situations. Where Jacob is a strong man, and we can find other evidence of that. But after this situation, his physical strength is weakened. He's damaged. But his soul, his trickery, everything he's done to work to get the blessing that was promised to him. Remember, it was promised to him before he was born. The younger will serve the older. Is that right? The younger? No, the older will serve the younger. Is that right? The older will serve the younger. But he's going to receive the blessing. And so he's been working for it, but he's never just had it offered to him. It's been offered, but he's never trusted. So this, I think, is what's taking place. We'll read some notes here in just a moment. Man says, let me go, for it is daybreak. But Jacob replied, I will not let you go unless you bless me. The man asked him, what is your name? Jacob, he answered. So the man, again, you're going to know this. You're going to be pretty clear. This is God. But God knows what his name is. And it means, the one who grasped the heel, the deceiver. Esau says, he's just like his name. He tricked me these two times. He says, you're the one who manipulates. Then the man says, your name will be no longer be Jacob, but Israel, because you have struggled with God and with man and have overcome. So he struggled with Isaac. He struggled with Esau. He struggled with Laban. He's done these things. And now he's struggled. He's held God down. But what does he want from God? He wants a blessing. He wants the blessing. And the only way he can get the blessing is for God to pronounce it. You can't take it from him. You can't trick him into it. You just, I won't let you go until you bless me. And he's saying, you have struggled with man and with God. So you've been struggling with God. And he says, and have overcome. Meaning, you're going to get the blessing. Meaning, that it's weird. He's wrestling, he's fighting, he's holding. But I think what he wants, it'd be like me, us, wanting salvation, and I'm not going to let God go until you promise that I have salvation through Jesus Christ. It's like, now you may wonder about it, you may not understand it, but at some point the Spirit reveals it to you and all of a sudden you understand it. Now you know people you've explained things to and they have their own idea and they don't really understand, but all of a sudden sometimes it's like the Spirit just opens their eyes and it's like they receive the blessing. It's not like they got it. It's just like it was given to you. You received it. And Jacob is asking, he's already been promised the Abrahamic covenant. He's already received it, tricked it into it, but he has never had God just bless him with it. Then the man says, your name will no longer be Jacob, but it will be Israel, because you have struggled with God and with man and have overcome. Jacob says, please tell me your name. Now, this is similar to Samson's mom and dad, Manoah and his wife, Samson's mom and dad, asking the angel Lord what his name is, and he just says, it's too wonderful. I cannot communicate my name to you. It's not just a word, it's a concept. Just like Jacob is a name, but it's more than just a name. And that means Jacob's character's changed. The character's changed from Jacob, the deceiver, who's going to take it, to Israel, which is one who has struggled with God. And that sounds negative. You struggled, you fought with God. I knew after all my time as Jacob of tricking and working and laboring that there's only one way I'm going to get this is if God blesses me. I can't get it. I can't get it anywhere else except God. And I'm going to hold on to God until he blesses me. And it's like, well, that's what I've been wanting to do the entire time. And here's the blessing. So there's been a change in nature here. But he replied, why do you ask my name? Then he blessed him there. So the man, he gives him the blessing, and watch this. So Jacob called that place Peniel, however you want to say it. The first word, Peni, that's Hebrew face, and El, of course, is God. And it means, he says, because I have seen the face of God. He got right here on this side of the Jabbok, he got a blessing from God. In other words, the covenant promise to Abraham, to Isaac, has now just been given to Jacob, who's no longer going to be called Jacob. He's going to be called Israel. And there again, there's El, God. And here's, I've got it in the notes there. This refers to struggle with God. And it's not a warring, it's not a fighting, it's a, I know you've got it and I want it. I'm going to hold you till I get it. But in the, again, okay, oh, that's sweet. That all makes sense. But in the process, to get released, he had to wrench his hip and Jacob's going to limp away. So there was a physical damage done to him, but a soulish change. He went from being the trickster be the one who went to God and says, I know I can only get it from you. I'm not going to let you go until you give it to me. He gets it. But in that transition, he's physically damaged and he limps the rest of his life. And it becomes, as we'll say right here in a moment, because of that, the wrenching of the hip, that part of the animal is in the dietary laws of Israel. They never ate that portion of the animal, the tendon, the muscles in that area, because of what took place. Right, because their father Israel wrestled with God, and he damaged that part of Israel or Jacob, and They never ate that part. So this is a big deal. And it's one of those things where it's like, there's pieces that I'm missing. Jacob called that place Peniel, saying, "It is because I saw the face of God," or "I saw God face to face, and yet my life was spared. The sun rose above him as he passed Peniel, and he was limping because of his hip." And I don't think that, Ian, it doesn't say, and so he limped the rest of his life, but I think that injury was a permanent injury. "Therefore, to this day, the Israelites do not eat the tendon attached to the socket of the hip, because the socket of Jacob's hip was touched near the tendon. Jacob looked up, and there was Esau coming with his 400 men. So he divided the children among Leah." So he's on the other side. He divides his two camps up. The 400 men, and he divided his children among Leah and Rachel and the two maidservants. That'd be, you know, his two other wives. "He put the maidservants and their children in front, Leah and her children next, then Rachel and Joseph to the rear. He himself went on ahead and bowed down to the ground 7 times as he approached his brother." So he had first separated himself in case, one, he's going to attack one of the camps, but also if he's looking for Jacob, Esau would just bypass the camps and keep pursuing. He wouldn't lose his children because of this. Now he bows down 7 times. So again, great sign of honor to Esau. But Esau, again, here it is. "But Esau ran to meet Jacob and embraced him. He threw his arms around his neck and strangled him," no, "and kissed him, and they wept." So it's a joy for Esau. It's a joy for Jacob. And again, Jacob has just had an encounter, I will say, with Jesus, with the Son of God, who was struggling with him. And he's been blessed by him. And so the trickery, the conniving, all that he's done, it's like, that no longer matters. God has seen me face to face, and he's spoken to me this blessing. I have the... Now, it doesn't record the blessing. It doesn't tell you what it was. But you assume it's, "I'm giving this to you, what Abraham, Isaac, and you are the one I'm blessing you." So he comes across, so it's like God's on his side. Esau's not going to kill him. Esau's excited. So there's a lot of things happening here. And as I read this, it's going to be, I think you just have to understand, and you don't have to accept it without understanding it, but Esau has accepted the situation. Esau, this land is the land of Esau. It's Edom. He's got 400 troops. He's got family. He's got his genealogies listed. He's got animals himself. He's got everything. This is the land of Esau. It's like, what about the land promised to Abraham? It's like, that's yours, brother. I mean, it was said beforehand. I know you tricked me, but it was never mine. And he's already got some stuff down here. And the fact that he's going to receive these gifts, he doesn't send these back. He accepts them all. Eventually, he accepts them. It's like he's being blessed by his greater brother. So Esau, really through this whole thing, there's no animosity. There's no "you owe me." He's got his land. He's got his life. He receives it as a blessing from the older, not the older brother, but the blessed brother who's going to have the inheritance. And so this just continues as this goes. But Esau, I'm in verse, okay, who's our, okay, and they wept. Okay, verse 5. Is that a 5 or a 3? "Then Esau looked up and saw the women and children. 'Who are these with you?' he asked. Jacob answers, 'They are the children God has graciously given your servant.'" Again, calling himself servant. "Then the maidservants and their children approached and bowed down. Next, Leah and her children came and bowed down. Last of all, Joseph and Rachel, and they too bowed down. Esau asked, 'What do you mean by all these droves I met?'" That's just the waves of livestock and the servants coming with them. What was that all about? I mean, traffic was backed. Usually I could get up here in just a few hours, but traffic was backed up, all the herds coming down here. He says, to find favor in your eyes, my Lord. I'm trying to please you. But Esau says, I already have plenty. I don't need these things. My brother, keep what you have for yourself. No, please, said Jacob, if I have found favor in your eyes, accept this gift from me. For to see your face is like seeing the face of God. Now that you have received me favorably, please accept the present that was brought to you, for God has been gracious to me, and I have all I need. And because Jacob insisted, Esau accepted it, which is, again, I think a sign of humility. He accepts it, his greater brother's giving it to him. And, you know, he's not giving Jacob's, you know, I would be like, oh, you're not going to kill me? Well, then, okay, I'll take that stuff back. But it was something he wanted to give, he wanted to solve, and Esau receives it. Then Esau said, let us be on our way, I will accompany you. But Jacob said to him, my Lord knows that the children are tender and that I must care for the ewes and the cows and the who are nursing their young. If they are driven hard just one day. Now, again, you remember how he left Laban. I mean, they're making good progress. They're driving the flocks and herds pretty hard, it seemed like. Now he's saying we can't drive them any harder. All the animals will die. So let my Lord go on ahead to his servant while I move along slowly at the pace of the droves before me and that of the children until I come to the Lord in Seir. Esau said, then let me leave some of my men with you. But why do that? Jacob says, just let me find favor in the eyes of my Lord. So that day Esau started on his way back to Seir. Jacob, however, was Esau inviting him down to Edom, you know, follow me back home? But Jacob, once Esau's gone, you can look at your map right there. I've got really got him, got a little picture of two. Remember, I made these in 1987 with a sharp pencil and a Xerox machine. So I got two little guys fighting there. That's the best I can do. That's art at the top. I haven't improved in 40 years. He crosses, and that's where he meets Esau. But after Esau returns to Edom, Jacob swings across the Jordan River and goes to Succoth, which is right there by the bend in the Jabbok River before it empties into the Jordan, goes to Succoth, and then crosses over back to Shechem, or into the Shechem. Notice where Bethel's at. See Bethel? He says, I'll return to Bethel, where he stood up the stone, he saw the ladder or the stairway of the angels, and I'll come back here and make an offering. You'll be my God. Instead, he goes to Shechem and buys some land from the man named Shechem. That's like the head of the city. He buys some land from Shechem in the area around Shechem, outside the city, for his flocks, and that's where he's going to be. So he buys some land in the promised land, and Esau returns to Edom. So now both Esau and Israel are in their place. I'm in verse 18. After Jacob came from Padan Aram, he arrived safely at the city of Shechem in Canaan and camped within sight of the city. For 100 pieces of silver he bought from the sons of Hamor, the father of Shechem, the plot of ground where he pitched his tent. There he set up an altar and called on El Elohe Israel. And you can see the footnote down there. I'm looking for it. I'm having a hard time seeing the E's and the G's tonight. It means God, the God of Israel, or mighty is the God of Israel. And so, there you see right there? That's huge. El Elohe Israel, and it's like, this is the God of Israel, and who is Israel? Well, Jacob is Israel. Israel, he's the one who struggled with God. Well, he recognizes his new name, Israel, and calls Yahweh now the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, is now the God of Israel, which Israel and Jacob are the same person. So that's a huge process right there of in the beginning, where he was still, he knew God of Abraham, he knew the God of Isaac, but now he's calling Elohi the God of Israel, or that's the closest coming, saying, my God, Yahweh is my God. And so there he is in Shechem, and that's a huge, like, I kind of want to read that together because it's a huge event there of his name being changed. And of course, Israel becomes, they're called Israelites. They're not called Abrahamites. I mean, you ever think, they should be called the Abrahamites because he was the one who received the covenant. It's the covenant of Abraham. And so who owns the land that was covenanted to Abraham? Well, the Abrahamites. No, it's not the Isaacites, and it's not the Jacobites. It's the Israelites. It's this person right here that came back. And one of the things, and I'll close with this, I think, somewhere on the back page. I think it's point 11 on there. Somewhere. I've got it written down there. This is the very last one. The idea that Jacob leaving the land, prospering outside the land, returning and meeting God face to face, and then coming back into the land and calling on the name of the God that he just met, and prospering that whole way and bringing this prosperity back into the promised land, that is, in a sense, the history of Israel. They leave the land, they flee from the land, driven from the land. In the nations, they prosper. They return, they meet the Lord, and they return to the land. And Israel, Jacob, has just, in a sense, acted out with the whole history. Oh, yeah, it's point 11. Jacob lived outside the land through abuse. Though abused, he prospered. He was abused by Laban for 20 years, but he still prospered outside the land. Jacob returned to the land with promise and prosperity. He comes back with the blessing and prosperity. He comes back with peace with Esau. He's got a treaty with Laban. He saw God face to face, crossed the Jordan, settled in the land, and some say Jacob's experience is the nation of Israel's experience throughout history. So with that right there, we'll close this down. And Jacob is back in the land, new name. I would say Jacob has, in Christian terminology, he has been born again. Of course, the whole work is not done. But Abraham was a believed the promise, and it was considered righteous. He was considered right. He was justified. Now, Jacob begs for the blessing. He begs to hear the promise, and God speaks it to him. And he receives it. So in this sense right here, Jacob has now heard the blessing and has received it. It is reckoned unto him. It is considered to him. He is now righteous himself because he has believed God. He's not tricked for the promise. He's not lied or worked for the promise. He's heard it, believed it, and now is, like Abraham, considered righteous. And God considered it righteous. Chapter 34 there in Shechem. You can't live like Jacob for all those 20 years. And do all the conniving and have 12 good son or 11 good Sunday school boys. There's some boys now have to grow up, and that very next chapter. I mean, you're living. You got your family back in with the Canaanites. And he's got a daughter. She's going to get raped by some of the men in Shechem in the city. The sons are going to take vengeance, and Abraham's going to be, oh my gosh, and he's going to have to. It's again, we got some work to do. Joseph has to be born. Joseph's brother has to be born. Joseph's going to get sold into slavery. A lot of heartache yet to go through. But there we have that story. He's back in the land, and I think he's a believer. I think he's received the covenant, not tricked his way into it, but what was promised to him, God has blessed him with what was promised. And you don't need that junk in between, all the trickery and the lying, the manipulating, the working. God promises it, receive it, and continue on. I'll pray and we're done. Father, we do thank you for the chance to look into these verses. We thank you for your word. We ask that we would ourselves see you face to face, that we would reach out to you, that we would struggle with you, that until we understood your promises and understood your blessings, that we could receive the things you promised to give us that is for your advantage and for our advantage. And again, we do ask that we would learn from these things and that we treat others in a way that is just and righteous, and that we could live in a land that is true to reality, that we could see a change in our nation that would turn back to the ways of God, the ways of truth. We ask that we might be part of that. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Thank you for your patience. Thanks for being here.